Can lawyers use the iPad successfully, or are they tied to a PC? Are iPads the future of the profession, or just another fad? Are other products as good as the iPad? Our guest, Brett Burney of Burney Consultants, is a legal technology consultant who offers iPad training and support for law firms, as well as litigation support technologies with the iPad, Mac, and Windows. In this discussion, Ed and Brett will compare and contrast the iPad with other available products. You can read more about Brett Burney at his website, www.burneyconsultants.com. That's B-U-R-N-E-Y consultants.com.
Brett, it's a pleasure for me to be able to have this opportunity to talk to you about the iPad and perhaps a little bit broader even than that. But thanks for joining us today.
Ed, it's my pleasure. I've been looking forward to talking about it. It's certainly, the iPad is a hot topic these days for lawyers and all kinds of professionals, no matter what business you're in. So happy to be here. So thanks for the invitation.
Well, let's set the stage. I mean, we have Apple, we have Microsoft, we have Amazon. You know, we have all these big guys in the field of technology. And I know I, for one, full disclosure, I guess, is that I had the Apple phone, or the iPhone.
Yep.
And frankly, was very disappointed and gave it up and went to Motorola's Razer.
Yes, sir.
Or Razer Max, whatever they call it. And
right.
I was very happy with it, but am somewhat disillusioned by what it does as well, because all these phones are trying to be computers. And frankly, the phone, at least for my eyes, is too small to be really effective, other than being able to make a phone call, receive a phone call, and perhaps read some emails and send some emails. But we now have the iPad. And for me, I bought the iPad, and I'm in love with it. I think it's phenomenal. Just absolutely phenomenal. And what makes it even better for me is that I put a keyboard to it.
Yeah.
I got a Logitech keyboard, and I know there are other brands around, but
right.
That makes it just so usable. Now I sit in meetings, and I take notes because I'm a good typist, and I can't read my own handwriting any longer. So this is a salvation, and now they've come out with a mini iPad. I mean,
right.
where are we going with this? Is the iPad still the best option, even with all these other things like an Android, a Kindle, a Windows 8, and all that stuff coming out? Where are we with this?
Well, you know, Ed, it's a great question that everybody asks every time I go somewhere and give a presentation on the iPad. If you ask that question to me today, right now, I would still say the iPad is your best option. The problem is that answer could be different tomorrow or next week or next month. And certainly a lot of us are anticipating, you know, the next version of even the Windows Surface tablet that is coming out, I think, within just a couple of weeks or so.
What is that?
Well, that's sort of the Windows tablet.
Okay.
The Surface RT, and then there's...
Oh, yes, yes.
That's coming out.
Is that the one from Microsoft?
That's exactly right.
Okay.
You know, by the way, I always tell people this, or I always set the stage, as you say, sort of with the tablets in general, because this is not the first Windows or the first Microsoft tablet, actually, that we've seen. In fact, it was in 2001. Bill Gates himself was very excited about the Microsoft tablet PC. It was actually the Microsoft Windows XP Tablet PC Edition. That was the full name. Now, I wrote an article in 2003 for Law Office Computing Magazine on, like, the top five tablet PCs. And I loved it. And Bill Gates was very excited about this pet project, because he thought that it was going to revolutionize the way that we use computers. And I agreed with him at the time. The biggest problem, though, is that it was really a desktop system kind of squeezed into a tablet interface. I mean, it was running Microsoft Windows XP, which is part of the name of the device. And so I always tell people you still had that same red X in the upper right-hand corner, you know, that it's easy to click with the mouse, for example. but not so easy to tap with a finger or a stylus in this case if you have a PC. Well, so that was in 2001, right? In 2007, the iPhone was introduced, many years later, right? But it was revolutionary in that sense, in the fact that it was literally a finger-operated system, if you will. Apple's marketing department wouldn't like using that phrase, but it was the first sort of truly innovative touch interface at the time. So we had our first iPad glimpse in January of 2010. Right? A full 10 years after the first Microsoft tablet came out. Now, actually, it was in January 2010 when Steve Jobs announced the iPad, but it wasn't even available until April of 2010. So that means we barely had the iPad even around for 3 years. But I think the biggest thing that Steve Jobs did that day in January of 2010 when he announced the iPad is that he actually meant it not to replace a device that we already had, such as a laptop or a phone. He said, everybody already has a computer. Everybody already has a laptop or a desktop that they use, and everybody already has a smartphone. And his question that day was, is there room for a third category of device? Which at the time was just insane. I mean, why would we want to carry yet another device? But it's just like you said, Ed, you've fallen in love with the idea of being able to sort of carry around this, well, frankly, this yellow, this legal pad size device that you can now pull up documents and you could edit things, you could read news on it, just like you would carry a newspaper, for example. And so now the fourth generation iPad is available in 3 years' time, which in and of itself is amazing, but it just continues to be the dominant platform. And I think a couple of quick reasons. The apps list, it all comes down to the apps a lot of times. Frankly, I think a more powerful argument is the fact that the iPad, it just still has the most intuitive interface for a lot of people. Now, maybe not for everyone, just like you said with the iPhone, you didn't want. But, you know, the Android devices, for example, are much more appealing to maybe some IT folks that like to tinker around a little bit. But it's not as smooth for maybe a lawyer that all they care about is, I just want something to work. I want it to work. And everybody from a 3-year-old, from my 3-year-old to the 98-year-old can pick up an iPad and just start noodling around with it and find out how to do something, which is amazing.
I think that the iPad, yeah, I think that the iPad is, I won't say it's super easy, but it's really good, and it allows you to do things, or allows me to do things that I wouldn't have done otherwise. I mean, as I say, I can take notes in a meeting that I would not have done on a laptop. I can read the news that's downloaded. I can watch movies on an airplane, which really has, I mean, that was one of my motivators, frankly, because I can download a movie before I get on an airplane and occupy my time with something more than reading, and in a sense waste my time, but watch good entertainment in an environment where I really can't do what I really want to do. I mean, I'm stuck in that tube for...
And it still works even if the person in front of you has reclined their chair back.
Amen. Oh, I used to, you know, when I had my laptop and I opened it up and the person in front of me would lean back, oh, did that frustrate me and anger me. One time the top of my laptop got stuck in the crevice of the seat in front of me, just blew me away. But it's just so much easier. So let me ask you, I don't know, I think you've answered whether the iPad is still the best option. I think it's one option and it works well in some cases. When I went to New York just recently, I found myself having the iPad, and because I wasn't doing a presentation, I didn't take my laptop, but something happened and I really needed my laptop to be able to connect back to my office more easily. So now I realize that there are occasions where I'll probably take both, which again drives me crazy because that just adds to the weight.
That's right.
One of the things I like about the iPad, and I have no idea, I'm suspicious, and I think maybe Apple paid off the airlines or TSA or whoever, but you don't have to take your iPad out
and put it in the box for screening. Just leave it packed in your case. You know, the right. computer, there's, I don't know what the difference is, but in any event, it is. But let me ask you the more important question for our listeners. How does the iPad fit into the daily workflow for the lawyer?
Oh, well, I think it's fitting in very well. But you know, it's not without its limitations. Exactly what you just said, Ed, is that it seems like from the dawn of the iPad that people have wanted to make it a laptop replacement. And there's nothing wrong with that. It's just that, number one, that was not how Apple ever intended it to be, truly. They wanted it, or they intended it to be, a third category of device. And so from that circumstance, I absolutely agree with you that there are still some areas of a legal workflow or a lawyer's daily workflow that they're probably still going to need a laptop. Frankly, for me, right off the top of my head, that's when you are truly doing some very complicated or involved word processing where you need some additional format tools, for example, that you're just not going to find on the iPad. And then, you know, another quick limitation I'll just throw out there that the iPad has is it isn't so intuitive in many respects, except that it doesn't work the same way that the computers work, the way that we've worked with computers over three decades now. And I mainly am talking about like a centralized file management structure. Like, you know, there's no My Documents folder on the iPad, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And so for some of those cases, you know, a lawyer may still need to turn to their computer because it still works the way that they've been used to working now for 25, 30 years.
Well, now you're talking about the generation differences.
Well, exactly, and I think that has some to do with it. But let me go to the positive side of where I think it fits within the daily workflow. When I do a lot of my presentations, one of the first things that I say is, why does the iPad appeal to lawyers or legal professionals? It's because all of us work with a ton of documents. I say that documents are the lifeblood of our profession. We all have stacks of documents, folders of documents, boxes of documents. And what I love about it is that we can now squeeze all of those documents into one small device. So, for example, to blow your mind a little bit, you know, you talk about taking the iPad on a plane to watch a movie, which is fantastic, and I absolutely agree, but what I do these days is, in the past, I would have a small, a manila folder full of cases or law review articles that I need to review for my e-discovery work, for example. And I would have this big, thick folder, right, that I would have to spread out on the tiny airplane table. But now, Ed, I simply have all those documents preloaded onto my iPad, and I bring it up into an app like Goodreader, for example. And instead of having my collection of different colored pens and sticky notes and highlighters that I would use to carry around, I simply just use my finger or a stylus on those documents inside an app, for example. And so just the fact that I can organize my documents, all of the documents I would normally print out and carry in a folder, I can now organize all of those in an iPad and then read them and annotate them just the same way that I would if they were in paper form, that has become pretty tremendous for me. I mean, that has become a game changer. It literally has become an electronic folder for me or a filing system now where I can access the documents that I need.
Well, one of the things that made it easier for me was the use of Dropbox.
Yes,
but
sir.
But the thing that is troubling for me is that for me to load from my PC in a fashion where I can pull it up from my iPad is that I have to now save it to my PC hard drive in the file system that I use and then save it again into Dropbox.
Right.
And so which is a double step, and what I'm thinking, and frankly, this thought just came to me within the last week, so I'm not sure what I'm going to do with the thought. I'm going to noodle on it a little bit more and talk to you more about it and others and so forth. But what I'm thinking of, right now I have an Exchange server. And I have the Exchange server so that I can see from various devices as I travel around the country because I still have a fairly active travel schedule. But if I eliminate the Exchange server, if I eliminate my filing system in the hard drive, and if I go to the cloud in some fashion, whether it's Apple's iCloud or it's somebody else's secure cloud-based system, now all I have to do is save it once. That, to me, seems like it's an opportunity, it's an option that had not been available before. Am I on target with that, or am I off base?
I think you're completely on target, Ed. I truly do. And in fact, that's, for the majority of what you just said, is exactly how I work these days. Even so, when I save a file on my computer, it usually is saved within a Dropbox construct that I have on my computer, which means then that I can access that same document from a hotel business room, for example, a computer there, my iPad, my iPhone, a client's computer at their site. I mean, it really is amazing that my entire file structure is available basically wherever I go. Now, it's easy for me to say that, but you and I both deal with a lot of legal professionals, of course, that are very hesitant to go to the cloud completely in that aspect, either because they can't, maybe they have a document management system or something at their firm that they use instead, or they frankly just have concerns about security and the ethical implications of using a cloud-based service. That's certainly a question that's swirling around our world a lot these days on various ethics committees, for example, from different states have started to rule on whether lawyers are allowed to use the cloud. And it frankly always comes down to a reasonable care standard, and as long as that they've taken the precautions they need to make sure that it's protected, that it's okay. But all you described, that is exactly possible today.
It's interesting to me that all the things that you're raising are issues that, A, we wouldn't have thought about 5 years ago, B, that a year ago still the answer would have been totally no, but today it's a possibility, and there are secure cloud-based systems, and the thing that I think will prevent us from moving in that direction is the element that you suggested, which is firms, especially the larger firms, already have constructs in place, and they're not yet compatible with the cloud. But as they change their systems, they will become more so. And when they are willing to say, look, I spent $1 million in creating this construct, but we're not any longer current, so that was good for the time we had it. Maybe our cost of doing business was a little bit more, but now is the time to move forward, and it's not going to cost us another $1 million to do so, but this is where we need to go. So when they get to that point in their financial analysis, they will make the move.
I agree completely, and I think for some firms, certainly for maybe mid-sized and smaller firms, the cloud offers an incredible wealth of advantages over some of the other systems. But let me just quickly throw out one other potential possibility that I've seen even arise with the firms that I work with. I go in and I do iPad training for a lot of firms, for example, and some firms have a WorldDocs document management system, or maybe other firms have a Docs Open, formerly Hummingbird, document management system. Well, there are apps today, like, for example, WorldDocs has a great app for the iPad. They were one of the first to develop an app for the iPad because they wanted those firms, their customers, to be able to have their lawyers to be able to use that instead of going to the cloud. And it works very well. It's probably not as seamless as maybe a Dropbox system or so, but it's there. You know, in other words, if a firm already has a WorldDocs management system in place, then this is a great option for them to go without sort of disrupting everything by moving to a different system. And so there are similar apps now for the iPad that for, as I said, Docs Open or DM5, and then the last one out there is the autonomy device system, the iManage, so that people can actually still access those documents wherever they are. And I think that just shows the power, I think, of the operating system on the iPad and the iPhone that these companies are starting even to develop for that, because they just see such a huge swing in that direction from mobile computing, and certainly the iPad is still the leader in that area.
Well, Brett, you know, for me it's a pleasure to talk with you and have this conversation. We've been talking a lot about the iPad and hardware in general. There's a whole other conversation, which I'd love to have with you on another occasion, about the applications and what applications are best utilized to generally operate the iPad and specifically for lawyers to operate and become more efficient. I want to ask you one last question, keeping to the hardware concept, and that is, how do you see the mini iPad relating to the iPad? Is it for a different marketplace, or would you see an individual having both the iPad and the mini iPad? And what do you see coming down the pike from Apple or others of a similar nature, or perhaps a different course of a different path altogether?
That's a great question, Ed. And you know, I have to say, when I heard Steve Jobs talk or introduce the iPad in 2010, and he said, you know, is there room for a third device? And you can imagine that he came to the conclusion that there was. I remember sitting there that day and just be like, seriously, do you really think I'm going to spend another $500 and buy a third device when I already have a computer and I already have a phone? And indeed, that was the critique of the iPad at the day, at the early stages. And, of course, now 3 years later, we look back and just we laugh at that now, because we know that they're, for many people, they have become an indispensable tool. Here's the way I see the way that the Mini fits in. I frankly think that the iPad Mini was Apple's response to this great swath of tablet devices that were the 7-inch size, like the Kindle and the Kindle Fire and the Android devices that came out. People liked having that smaller interface. Frankly, when I talk to legal professionals or lawyers, I still recommend the full-size iPad because, honestly, it comes down to something that sounds a little trivial, Ed, but it's about the same size as an 8.5 by 11 sheet of paper. I know that sounds a little silly, but that's one of the reasons I think the iPad has become so successful in the legal arena, is because it is as if you're taking a printed page off of a printer. In other words, instead of sending a document to my printer today, I'll send it to my Kindle, whether through Dropbox or an email, because I will read it on my iPad now instead of reading it on a piece of paper. Now, I know I'm a little bit on the nerdy side of what's going on, but I think that that's the future. We don't necessarily need to have a printout of it if we can hold it in our hands in sort of the same manner as a piece of paper. So just quickly to say, there is a place for the iPad Mini. I frankly think that it is maybe for a more of a recreational use. I think it is a fourth device now, but since I use my iPad to read blogs, for example, or to watch movies, I find that the Mini even does a better job in some of those aspects, or reading newspapers, or just catching up on email, because, well, you have to hold one to really get it. I mean, you can hold it in one hand. It just is a little bit lighter to hold. The battery is a little bit better. And then just quickly, the last differentiator there is the iPad Mini does not yet have a Retina display, whereas the full-size iPad does. And that is a critical piece when you're reading text on a screen, for example. And you really have to show them side by side to see the difference. But since lawyers work with so many documents today, that Retina display on the full-size iPad is usually a lot better to look at than the iPad Mini.
Well, Brett, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It's been my pleasure, and I always love interacting with you, and I always learn from you. Again, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Ed. This has been great. Thanks again.
You have been listening to a Law Biz podcast. For more podcasts, please visit www.lawbiz.com/podcasts.html. You can read more about this and other topics from the business of law at www.lawbizblog.com
or start your own discussion about this topic at www.lawbizforum.com. Join today. Feel free to tell your friends and colleagues about Law Biz Podcasts. You may duplicate this program in part or in whole, provided that you retain appropriate attribution and copyright notices.